The sentimental journey gonna set my heart at ease. Gonna make a sentimental journey to renew old memories.
In an acclaimed career spanning over half a century, husband and wife Steve Lawrence and Edie Gourmet represented the very best in popular music, starting with youthful pop hits in the 50s and 60s, Go Away Little Girl, Blame It on the Bossa Nova, followed by their Grammy and Emmy-winning triumphs focusing on the Great American Songbook. Their son, Emmy-nominated composer David Lawrence, hosts Steve Lawrence and Edie Gourmet, Memories of My Mom and Dad, an all-new My Music special that premieres this Saturday, December 2nd, on PBS. Executive producer and director T.J. Lubinsky joins us to talk about the project this morning. T.J. Lubinsky, welcome to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us.
Wow, Joe, you've got it all. You've got the whole history there, man.
Well, you needed an hour. I just did it in 35 seconds. But I'm fascinated as to what drew you to the project, and I assume it comes from David himself, who says this is something I want to do about my mother and father.
Well, no, the way I came across Steve and Edie was a little different. I was about 14 or 15 years old, and I always listened to music before my time. And there was a young lady, wasn't very serious, it was just puppy love, and it was whether or not she wanted to continue to go out with me, or as her mother was advising her to go back to her other boyfriend who was on track to be a doctor or a dentist. And she said, look, this guy, this Fakakta TV guy, he's never going to amount to anything, he's never going to be anything, you should go with the guy who's going to be a doctor, then you'll have a good living and a good life, and that's what you should do. So that's, we were in the process of going through that, and she decided, well, you know, I like you and I want to be with you, but he's going to be a doctor. This is like, you know, 14 years old, 15 years old, puppy love stuff. And so she went back with him, and that day, my form of medicine was to go to the record store and try to find something to ease my pain. And the guy behind the counter gave me a song by Steve Lawrence. He said, this is what you should listen to right now. And that was Go Away, Little Girl.
Go away, little girl. Go away, little girl. I'm not supposed to be alone with you.
Which was great. It was a nice, beautiful song.
I know that your lips are sweet, but our lips must never meet. I belong to someone else, and I must be true.
But I flipped it over, and when I flipped it over, the record that I heard by Steve Lawrence was called More.
More than the greatest love the world has known. This is the love I'll give to you alone. More than the simple words I try to say, I only live to love you more each day.
And that was everything. It described everything that I felt for this girl and the pain of breaking up and that I'd never get over her, but we did, and life moved on, and that was all fine, but that was the song that got me. I said, oh my God, I love Steve, and discovered all his other records, kind of the teen pop years from there. And as I started to get into television, I wanted very much to make a show with Steve and Edie as kind of the very first thing on my list to do.
So how then did you come to working with their son and to figure out how this retrospective would work?
You know, things happen when they're supposed to happen for a reason. And so for the past 20-some-odd years, Steve had a manager who, you know, I just didn't get along with. And she kind of played these games. Like, I would go to her every year and say, okay, can we do a show with Steve and Edie together? And she'd say, well, if you get Dwight Himian involved. Who's Dwight Himian? Dwight Himian was this amazing producer, director, who had died 20 years before I even got into the TV business. And so she knew that. And every year she'd send me on these wild kind of goose chases trying to find people that, well, if you get so-and-so involved, Steve will work with you. Steve was never going to work with me because he never got the offer because she never told him. So for 25 years, I'd kiss the ring. I'd go back. I'd find out if she liked a certain kind of food. I would send her whatever it was to try to get her attention to bring the offer to Steve. But she never did. And then finally, she died. And when she died, David stepped into the picture to start to take care of his father's affairs. As you may know, Steve has end-stage Alzheimer's and pretty bad at this point. But he doesn't want their legacy to die in vain of his mom and his dad. And so I basically called him up and I said, listen, I love your parents. You love your parents. Why don't we sit down in front of a camera and talk about all the memories of all these songs? And that was kind of the beginning of what you'll see on Saturday night on your local public television station.
When you work on a project like this, especially one that has significance and meaning to you, what is that like to try to capture these two people from, yes, another age, but really a timeless sense of their music and the relationship that they had of not only being musical superstars, but being husband and wife?
Right. Well, that's the interesting part, because I had never seen their act. I was too young. I was born in 1972, so really outside of appearing in Atlantic City, New Jersey or something, you know, I wasn't able to go out to Vegas and see their act. So I'd only heard about this stuff from people who had gone to see them over the years. And so it was very much reminiscent seeing footage. Finally, I was able to get a hold of footage of them, of, you know, I would say George Burns and Gracie Allen, maybe a little bit of Keeley Smith and Louis Prima, but with their own take and kind of their own chutzpah in it. And, you know, it was just great to discover that stuff. And then as it turns out, Steve owned all his own TV performances, which is a very rare thing for a performer back then in the late 50s and the 60s to own all their performances. So in a vault underground in Las Vegas were all these 2-inch tapes of all their TV shows and all their TV appearances that did together. So David allowed access to all that stuff. And then suddenly, you know, I'm seeing them do all their great hits, Portrait of My Love.
There could never be a portrait of my love for nobody. Paint a dream. You will never see a portrait of my love, for miracles are never seen. Soon forgets the Mona Lisa. It would take, I know, a Michelangelo, and he would need the glow of dawn that paints the sky above to try.
Edie doing, you know, Blame It on the Bossa Nova.
I was at a dance when he caught my eye, standing all alone, looking sad and shy. We began to dance, swaying to and fro, and soon I knew I'd never let him go. Blame it on the Bossa Nova.
So these really amazing songs that I had never seen, but seeing her, you find out what a great, amazing singer she was. I mean, she had a 5-octave range. She could belt out any song in much the same way as we think of Barbara Streisand today, but this, of course, was before Barbara Streisand and kind of just after Judy Garland, a little bit of Connie Francis mixed in. And to see her do all that Tin Pan Alley Broadway stuff, plus what I wanted to see from the two of them was all the teen hits, the pop hits, the rock and roll hits that, you know, they had to record along the way, and they all became big hit records, but people didn't see. So that was an amazing thing, to suddenly have access to all this footage that wasn't out there, hadn't been bootlegged, there was no way to see it. That was a big part of it. And, of course, my friend Carol Burnett, you know, who I've worked with several times over the years through the Ed Sullivan Show and other kind of specials, you know, it was great to have her archives and her memories of Steve as a comedian more than a singer, because that's how I knew Steve. I knew him mostly from being on the Carol Burnett Show or the Blues Brothers movies. And as much as I loved his voice, never really understood that, because most of their stuff hadn't been released on CD, certainly no compilation of all their big hits throughout the years. So just a lot of amazing things opened up as soon as we had the support of David.
And as far as the tape of going through that, I mean, that seems like quite a job to go through all that, to find those moments that were so special, to really put it into a context.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, if you've got a great emotion for music, if you feel it, if it moves you, if it makes you feel like, you know, sometimes there are things that are in your heart that you can't quite express, or they say things that speak exactly to you, that's what I always look for in a song. Now, there were some things that didn't exist. I mean, I go back to Steve in his early kind of pop days, get a song called Pretty Blue Eyes.
Thought I was in love before, and then you moved in next door. Pretty blue eyes, pretty blue eyes. All the guys from the neighborhood keep saying you sure look good with your blue eyes. Pretty blue eyes.
Another one called Footsteps.
And as I feel a teardrop fall, I hear your footsteps down the hall, walking away from me. Why did you say goodbye? Why did you make me cry? Now every day I wonder why?
Those were kind of never recorded on television because he was in the Army at the time when he came out of the Army. The two of them decided they're going to stick to their guns and be pop singers, not rock and roll singers. So there was never any footage of them except for one little clip we found of Edie performing Blame It on the Bossa Nova with Gary Moore, and that was a rare find. Again, never been seen.
And finding those rare finds, right? That's exciting. I mean, the things that you know perhaps are out there, but you didn't know that you had them and were able to share with an audience.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of the magic here, is that nobody's seen this stuff since it first aired in 1965. And, you know, their trajectory really was to be more Broadway stars and Tin Pan Alley singers than they were known, you know, at that time for having all these pop and teen record hits. So, you know, this is like a collection of all those years. And then, you know, just as important is the master recordings of their records. You see, they had a very unusual deal whereby after 25 years, the rights to the master recordings reverted back to Stephen Edie. So we suddenly had every single record they recorded to be able to release on this 5-CD set. And what's great about that is we had the multi-tracks, which are the parts of the records that make up the stereo recordings. A lot of this stuff was never even issued in stereo. So to be able to go back and remix everything from the multi-tracks and put out a CD set is every bit as thrilling to me as having the TV show. It's just an amazing thing, and people will get that when they support their local stations on December 2nd.
The first and only time I saw Stephen Edie perform was they opened for Frank Sinatra at the Knickerbocker Arena in Albany, New York on November 13th, 1991. And the thing that amazed me was how effortless it seemed for them on stage. Also, I would add, just how much fun they were having. Do you get that sense that, is that good acting, or was that really them?
Oh, no, that's really them. I mean, like watching Larry David, right? It's amplified. It's exaggerated. It's
sure.
Not exactly who they are, but it's the base of who they are, and that comes out very much in songs that they did, like Darn It Baby, That's Love, or The Honeymoon Is Over, where, you know, there's these little barbs, but they're not mean-spirited. They're just husband and wife kind of everyday living stuff. And so David talks about in this show how this is what life was like at the house, except suddenly Mel Brooks would show up, or suddenly Sid Caesar would show up, or Frank Sinatra would show up, and all of a sudden they're holding court with all these amazing singers and comedians of their time. So very much seeing who they are, just slightly exaggerated for the drama of the act.
It also showed how much, I think, affection that Sinatra had for the two of them. And of course, he was winding down his career when I saw them, Sinatra was. He made them very much a part of the entire evening, which was just lovely.
Yeah, I mean, as rumor has it, Frank, as he was, you know, on his deathbed, was really happy listening to Steve's records. He thought Steve was an amazing singer. There are times in this show where they do some of the same songs. I've Got You Under My Skin comes to mind.
I'd sacrifice anything, come what might, for the sake of having you near, in spite of a warning voice that comes in the night and repeats in my ear. Don't you know, little fool, you never can win. Use your mentality, wake up to reality. But each time I do, just the thought of you makes me stop. Before I begin, I've got you under my skin.
You know, you really see the comparison between these two and the chops. But that's not to throw anything away from Edie, because Edie was this amazing, amazing torch song singer, and she was phenomenal. But I only learned that through seeing the footage and hearing the records.
This entire series and putting this on PBS, what was it like for you in working with David? And ultimately, David, I would think it would be such a special thing to do, as he's also dealing with his father in his last stages.
Right. Yeah. I mean, look, that's a very sensitive thing, because he is in end-stage Alzheimer's. It could be any day that Steve goes. And that's a sad thing for everyone involved with the project, because we really loved Steve. You know, Edie went about 10 years ago. And this is a son, and dealing with, you know, everyday life with his dad, who just is not the same guy he used to be anymore because of this terrible disease. And so that sort of looms over everything, I think, but it doesn't necessarily come through on the television show, because we didn't want to make a funeral show. We wanted to celebrate who they are. And if anything, it's a very Jewish story. You know, Steve and Edie, both from Brooklyn and the Bronx, grew up. Steve was Ashkenazi, Edie was Sephardic, and, you know, they raised these two wonderful kids. Their first son passes at a very young age due to kind of a instant death syndrome, and David's left to carry on the torch with his parents. And here's the story of a son that's sharing his memories of continuing the legacy forward, completing that circle and sharing all the knowledge for his kids and for the rest of us to appreciate. So it's a very spiritual, almost Jewish story of a nice Jewish kid does right by his mom and dad. I think that's kind of the undertext of all of it.
The special is Steve Lawrence and Edie Gourmet, Memories of My Mom and Dad. It will debut nationwide this Saturday, December 2nd on PBS. T.J. Lubinsky, a great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you so much for sharing with us.
Absolutely my pleasure. Thank you.
Again, the special, Steve Lawrence and Edie Gourmet, Memories of My Mom and Dad, on PBS this Saturday, December 2nd. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
Never thought my heart could be so yearning. Why did I decide to roam? Gotta take a sentimental journey, sentimental journey home. Gonna take a sentimental journey.